Meta Practice V1. Chapter 2. One Lens, Many Lenses. Chapter 2. One Lens, Many Lenses. A life always has an organizing principle, whether or not the person living it has named one. Something is deciding what matters. Something is telling you what to notice, what to protect, what to pursue, and what to ignore. That something is a lens. A lens is not merely an opinion. It is an orientation of attention and action. It shapes the meaning of what you see before you consciously interpret it. If your lens is status, then rooms become rankings. If your lens is fear, then uncertainty becomes danger. If your lens is resentment, then other people become irritants or threats. If your lens is extraction, then relationships become resources. If your lens is image, then every moment becomes a stage. And if your lens is love, then every situation becomes a field of care in which truth still matters. The lens matters more than the moment. Most people evaluate life at the level of events. Did the meeting go well? Did I get what I wanted? Did that person approve of me? Did I avoid embarrassment? Did I win the argument? These questions are not meaningless, but they stay near the surface. A more powerful question asks not only what happened, but from what orientation you met what happened. Two people can take the same action from different lenses. One sets a boundary from love and respect. Another sets the same boundary from contempt. One works hard from devotion to something real. Another works hard from a desperate need to outrun worthlessness. One tells the truth to protect a relationship. Another tells the truth because they enjoy domination disguised as honesty. From the outside, these actions may look similar. From the inside, they create different lives. The lens determines the quality of experience while events are unfolding. It determines whether your day feels coherent or divided. It determines whether your actions leave an aftertaste of peace, numbness, pride, shame, or hidden fracture. Many lenses running at once. Most people are governed by many lenses at once. They want to serve, but also to outshine. They want intimacy, but also invulnerability. They want truth, but only when it flatters their side. They want freedom, but only if it costs nothing. They want peace, but not at the price of surrendering superiority. This multiplicity is not richness. It is often conflict. This is the underlying texture of a lot of modern unease. Hour by hour, whichever lens is most rewarded by the situation takes the wheel. At work, ambition. On social media, image. In conflict, defensiveness. In private guilt, self-soothing. In spiritual spaces, lofty language. In intimate relationships, fear of exposure. By the end of the week, it is hard to tell what the person truly serves. Often they cannot tell either. They just know they are tired, and the day did not feel like one continuous life. The operating systems of division. Certain lenses are rewarded so consistently in modern life that they begin to function like operating systems. They run in the background. They shape attention before thought. They decide what counts as success, threat, relevance, and self-protection. Because they are often culturally normal, people mistake them for reality itself. A person says, "I'm just being practical." Often what they mean is, "I have accepted a narrow lens as the price of functioning." Below are the most common. 1. Status. Where do I stand relative to others? Once this becomes primary, rooms stop being composed of human beings and start becoming moral scoreboards. Status is powerful because it can masquerade as excellence. But worth can never feel stable when it depends on comparative position. Someone will always be ahead, more beautiful, more acclaimed, more secure, more articulate. The result is fragmentation. The self becomes distributed across endless acts of measurement. 2. Comparison. What does their life mean about mine? Comparison turns life from participation into surveillance. You are never simply living. You are constantly monitoring what your life appears to be worth in relation to other lives. 3. Self-protection. How do I avoid hurt, embarrassment, loss, or exposure? Some self-protection is wise. But when avoidance of pain becomes the hidden governor of the personality, conversations are shaped less by truth than by defensiveness. Care gets rationed according to risk. The self survives, but does not quite come alive. 4. Image management. How am I being perceived? Image management has become nearly ambient in digital life. People edit not only what they say, but what they are willing to feel, admit, attempt, endorse, regret, or question in public. They become managers of impression rather than participants in reality. 5. Resentment. Who has wronged me? Grievance often contains real truth, and some anger is morally clarifying. The problem begins when resentment stops being a signal and becomes a home. 6. Extraction. What can I get from this? The more thoroughly you use this lens, the harder it becomes to encounter anything without calculating utility. Eventually, even your own life becomes raw material. 7. Domination. How do I make sure I cannot be overruled? Domination cannot sustain reciprocal reality. If other people must remain beneath you in order for you to feel stable, then care becomes impossible. 8. Withdrawal. How little of myself can I feel or reveal in order to remain undisturbed? Withdrawal is often mistaken for wisdom. From the outside, it can look like maturity. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it is unprocessed fear with better aesthetics. Each of these lenses solves a short-term problem. That is why they are tempting. But each also narrows the field of care. It asks you to exclude something essential, the dignity of other people, the truth of your own motives, the larger whole, the long-term shape of your character. A lens becomes fragmenting when it can only function by shrinking what counts. Why love is different. Universal love is not merely a nicer lens among many. It is categorically different because it expands the circle of inclusion rather than tightening it. It tries to hold self, other, and whole together. It does not ask you to care for others by erasing yourself. It does not ask you to protect yourself by dehumanizing others. It does not ask you to serve the whole by becoming abstractly indifferent to the part. Other lenses specialize. Love integrates. This does not mean love answers every practical question automatically. It does mean that love provides the only orientation broad enough to keep reality from getting cut into morally convenient pieces. One lens is not behavioral uniformity. To live through one lens does not mean responding to everything the same way. It does not mean flattening life into one mood or one script. Love can be gentle. Love can be firm. Love can yield. Love can refuse. Love can console. Love can confront. Love can leave. Love can protect. The point is not behavioral uniformity. The point is moral and experimental coherence. A person organized by one lens may still act differently across situations, because situations differ. The difference is that the actions all emerge from the same root orientation. This changes the feel of life. You no longer need a different soul for every room. The promise. Life gets noticeably better. Sleep deepens. Anxiety thins. Difficult people lose their grip on you. Relationships warm. The day stops feeling like a series of small recoveries from itself. The peer-reviewed research, summarized in Chapter 4, confirms what practitioners have always reported: measurably less depression and self-criticism, more positive emotion, stronger social connection, even better physical resilience. Conflict, loss, and limitations still happen. The practice does not abolish the conditions of being human. What it changes is how you meet those conditions and how often the rest of life feels good. Living through one lens is not an escape from being human. It is the closest most of us will get to living one whole life instead of many fragmented ones.